Well, I said, all right, is he sitting on the stool? I presume it's like a hilarious artistic statement because he's called the band are called Stool. Ha 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 ha, he's on a stool. And Phil just said, no, he'll be wasted.
And I think it was a chair, ultimately. It wasn't even a stool.
Well, when does a stool become a chair? It's a philosophical question that very few have been able to answer.
After centuries.
Well, a chair becomes a stool after a badger eats it.
Wow. Point.
It's good. I sound husky tonight, by the way, fellas. I've just got over a really bad chest infection, so hi. I can say hi, ladies.
Yeah. Now is the time for people to $20 actually. $20 will get you a custom phone
Oh,
greeting.
I will do anything, anyone. I will do anything for $20, listeners. Anything.
Anything?
Every man has his price, and mine's $20.
Wait, is that in pounds or euros or what?
Nope. We're going for £14. Even cheaper in England.
For 14 pounds, Sean will do anything.
Anything.
All right. So I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Sean Watson.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And we are Commanderin. Music. It's time for music.
Yeah.
Mandarin.
Yeah.
Hey Phil, why don't you thank the listeners for listening?
What a grand idea. Thank you for listening, everybody. We're going to have a wonderful show today. Actually, we're going to put a spotlight on not just community issues, but a community member who is guesting today. But we will never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderinMTG and talk to us there. This week, like I said, we have a wonderful show lined up, don't we, gentlemen?
Yes.
We're going to shine a spotlight on the token deck building strategy, dun dun dun, that we call Big Tokens Spam. This is the first in our Big Token series.
Hey, did you like the Big Mana series, which hasn't quite concluded? Then you're gonna love this.
We will be running two series concurrently. In fact, we may at some point record Big Mana and record Big Tokens and just play them all at the same time. Just,
What?
yeah, it's true. Okay, that's not
Yeah.
true, is it?
No, it's not
Well,
true.
the common thread with all of today's commanders is that they are 0/0 legendary creatures that enter
That's
the
rubbish.
battlefield with a
That's from
number
zero
of.
zero.
I
That's
know what
terrible.
they're worthless, but they enter the battlefield. It's a little ameliorating that they enter the battlefield with a number of +1/+1 counters that they can then convert into token creatures, among other things. Those commanders are Gave, Guru of Spores in white, black, green,
Gave.
emphasis on green. Marath, Marath, Will of the Wild in white, red, green, and Ulasht, the Hate Seed, in red, green. Is there a common thread there?
Yes.
Black.
So, as we said, we brought a special guest on who's proven himself to be an expert in this sort of deck in our frequent play testing. He is the Tyrant of Tokens, friend of the show, and Hornet Queen. I mean, friend of the show, Nick Jaragrulski. I mean, Jaragoski.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Yay.
We have talked to you extensively during our playtesting sessions and have really come to know you. It's been over a year for actually all of us hanging out together, hasn't it?
Yeah, a little over a year now. It's been a great experience and appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. When did you start playing Magic?
I originally started playing Magic back in summer of 09. I had a friend introduce me right when the M10 core set was coming out.
Wow.
And really got into it during the Zendikar block.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, it was a great time to pick up a lot of full art lands and some pretty awesome legendary creatures.
Did you get the fabled foil Jace the Mind Sculptor?
I didn't have a foil, but I did open two Jaces during drafting periods at that time.
Did you pick them?
Yes. Obviously.
I just wanted to make sure. I mean, maybe we didn't recognize the value of a terrible
experience with one of them later on, but...
Oh, what was the terrible experience?
Your dreams that come to life and start telling you to...
It was after I had stopped playing Magic for a while, and I was selling off some of the set, and I asked the wife to ship off a Jace I had sold on eBay, but she forgot to use a top loader.
Oh, no.
And that came back to me.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Because it's your beloved wife, I presume you said, "Don't worry, dear, I'll forgive you."
No, all is well. I actually ended up trading it for about $40 in trade value later on, so it wasn't terrible.
Wasn't a total loss.
Wasn't too beat up.
No.
Hmm. Well, and so, Nick, when did you start playing Commander?
I started playing Commander it's about 2 years ago now, March of 2014.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah, I was going into the store to sell off the collection because at the time I had no one to play with, and the store had just opened up recently in our town, and a couple of people were standing over my shoulder salivating at all the original Zendikar cards I had in my binder, and they said, "Oh, you should play Commander." And I had no idea what that was, but an hour later I was going home with some new cards rather than selling my old ones.
It was fate. So whoever those two vultures were, we thank you.
Yes. Thank you, vultures. Salivating vultures. Do you remember your first commander?
Well, my first complete set of 100 cards, I don't know if I would call it a commander deck, was the Omnath Locus of Mana. But soon after that, my true commander, and I still have it today, is Reese of the Redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know if you know this about me, Phil, but I do like tokens.
You know, I think we suspected that, and we'll see as we go through this episode if that actually is true. Before we get into that, though, we have a bit of news. Christopher Rush, the artist who is most famous for Black Lotus and who made many, many other Magic cards, he has sadly passed. And so our condolences, it's always awkward, guys, I'm sorry. Our condolences go out to Chris Rush, his family, his friends, and of course, all of the people at Wizards of the Coast who worked with Chris. His death is a great loss to us, and we really appreciate his work.
He painted and did the artwork for some of the most iconic cards. I mean, I can't think of many Magic players over a certain age that wouldn't immediately look at the artwork for Lightning Bolt and know exactly what that card does.
That's right. That's right.
Without seeing the red border or anything, just that cloud with that single blue streak going down it.
And you know, even if you're unlucky enough to play with those cards, you're still playing with his artwork every time you play a land, because he did the original mana symbols.
Yeah, that's true.
I know people who have those symbols tattooed up their arms.
Are they adding the Astrid?
they better do. Well, I could say it's already there, but it's colorless, so you can't see it.
Right. So again, many thanks to Chris Rush for defining what Magic is for all of us. It's a fantastic contribution, and we should all be so lucky to have that level of involvement in Magic. To change the pace and get us kind of heading toward our main topic, let's talk about what we've been either playing or play testing. We'll try to avoid talking about the token spam decks that we've been testing, but oh my goodness.
It might come up.
So important. Yeah, it might come up. So, Nate, what have you been testing?
Well, remember that last time that we all took out our token decks and faced them off against each other?
Oh, God.
I do, actually.
Right, that Nath game?
I have woken up screaming 3 times since then.
So that was Nate's Nath, Phil's Marith, my Garve, and...
Nick had a surprise Tassigar.
Tassigar token, that was it, yes.
Yes. Tassigar tokens.
Yeah.
The X-Men theme deck. To summarize, The final move of that game was me swinging into Phil with 823 damage. 47 of that was unblockable commander damage. I could have gone over 1,000, but I held some blockers back because I didn't want to overcommit.
Yeah, because I might have had a fog that I could play with no tapped, no untapped lands.
And no cards in hand.
And no cards in hand because I was playing against your Nath deck. Oh, my goodness.
Oh. Yes.
Yes.
So we'll talk about Nath later in another episode.
Yeah. That's later in the Big Token series, right?
Sure.
I didn't see the end of that game because I'd gone to bed in a strop. Fine, kill me. I'm going to bed. Screw you guys.
Yeah.
Didn't like you anyway.
I did take a screenshot of the playtest game we were doing, and so I'll share that, and we can put that in the video if that's possible, and certainly tweet about it, along with the missing tweet for this blade that I almost choked on. What else have you been playtesting, Nate?
Oh, I've started a Progenitus 5-color enchantments and experience counters deck. So I took most of the C15 commanders that grant experience counters and jammed them all in a 5-color deck with a bunch of enchantment creatures.
Can I guess which one you didn't put in?
Yeah, Mizzix doesn't really fit with a creature. You know, all of the other guys have something to do with, guys and ladies, have something to do with creatures, but Mizzix does not, so I left Mizzix out.
Yeah, I guess that's the case.
I played against that deck earlier.
What was it like to play against?
I thought it was funny because it was running all 15 of the gods from Theros. That was quite entertaining.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that's where Nate breaks out his devotion counters.
Oh, no, I didn't. I don't do that anymore. That's just annoying to keep up with the current interface.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah, it was fine. I took it down, but I coincidentally had a deck brilliantly designed to take it down. It was purely by accident. So it was one of those where it just lined up right for me.
And I'm also doing research on a new Shadowborn Apostles deck because when I was doing research for Shadowborn Apostles lately, Benny Smith, who is a friend of Sheldon and they can go eat ribs together, he did an article on Caridor Shadowborn Apostles a couple years ago. And we're not using all the same tricks, but we're using enough that I need to find a new commander to claim as my own, and I think I found one.
Oh?
And you'll find out.
You're not going to share?
No, you'll find out in playtesting.
Oh, dear. All right.
I look forward to that punch in the face.
I playtested Nate against that the other day, and it was pretty nasty. Definitely an 8 deck.
Yeah, and I looked on EDH Rec. There are not enough decks in EDH Rec for it to return a result with that commander plus Shadowborn Apostle.
Really?
So I'm claiming that space as mine, and I'll make it work.
Oh, cannot wait to publish that deck list. Maybe we'll have to do a deck tech on it. What do you think?
We'll see if it needs one.
Excellent. Well, I'm doing nothing quite so spectacular as defining a deck archetype, or at least a commander deck archetype. I've been playtesting Riku and playtesting Marath, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I've also been tuning the Mimeoplasm with all of these new Eldrazi. The Mimeoplasm has some friends that want to come out and play with it. So I'm also going to make a paper version of that once I'm done playtesting it, because I've got some special games coming up, and I definitely want to show up with my A game, as it were, or my A deck. And Sean, what about you? Now, you've been doing something interesting as well.
Yeah, so I've really loved Oath of the Gatewatch. It's been, in my opinion, a super good set for Commander, and there's another format it's been good for as well, but we won't talk about that. So I decided to brew with what was my favorite card from it for the Gatewatch, which is Ailey, the Eternal Pilgrim. And she's fantastic. She plays right into the style of magic I play. So the deck, I like commanders, the decks where the commander isn't an essential part of it, but the commander supports the strategy of the other 99.
Which is generally oppressive control.
That's generally how I play. Yeah. Shut up, you.
Yep.
So the theme of the deck was, I mean, it's got obviously a life gain sub theme because she needs your life to be above 50 or above to get her exile thing. But it's keep everything exiled, because it seems that in every Commander game, both paper and deck testing online, graveyard recursion is the absolute cutting edge of what everyone is doing at the moment. So I wanted something where I can say, well, do you know what? I don't need to exile everything or destroy everything, but I can exile the key components from your deck to stop it working. Nate played against it earlier today. So, I mean, what did you think of the deck, Nate? And that's the sound I look for from Nate. It was getting a little bit abusive, where I think I got Runescar Demon out of my graveyard and to play 7 times.
Oh my word.
Yeah, Emiria Shepherd is the champion of the deck. That card is brutal. And then keep recurring sort of land and bits and bobs. So if you get a Wayfarer's Bauble and Emiria Shepherd out, you can crack a plane in.
And you put Sword of the Animist on your commander and land every time you attack, which triggers Emiria Shepherd.
And everything coming back. So you just... But I think by turn 10, I had 22, 23 land out. And that's in a white-black deck, people. White-black.
Wow.
And it's really hard. You can't exile my stuff unless you're hitting the graveyard directly, because I'll just sacrifice it. So I really like it, and it's only at stage 1. I don't know how much more brewing it needs. There'll be a couple of tinkering here and there. It only has 2 tutor cards in the whole deck, but I can keep bringing them back. Oh, no, sorry, it's got a Demonic Tutor as well, but it's got Sidisi and Runescar Demon, so they can keep doing their thing. And a lot of the white staples, like Swords and Path to Exile, yada, 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 you don't need them in the deck because Ailey can do it herself. So it actually opens up brew space for the rest of the deck. It's very cool. Anyway, I'll send a link to the deck, and you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, sounds great. So you you start by exiling a couple of creatures, you get your life total up, and then you just start exiling.
You just sack some of your own bits and bobs, yeah. So you're looking to get into the battlefield triggers, and then you sacrifice your stuff to get your life up. And then you've got life link across stuff. So you don't need too much of it, because Ailey can turn all your stuff into value town. And then there's the classic oppressive sacrifice cards like Dictate of Erebos, Grave Packs, that sort of stuff. Everyone loves those.
Wow.
You know, yeah, she's super good. And for 2 mana, a white and a black, for a 2/3 death touch, no one wants to attack into you. It's like, you can attack into me, I might lose my commander, but you're going to lose yours too. All right, game on. I'll have a bit of that.
And
enough about Ailey, I guess.
Well, that sounds awesome. So, Nick, what have you been doing? Now, you're trying something different, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been playing Tassigar as my new token commander for Sultai, and the idea behind it is to use, instead of attacking with the tokens, use them as a resource to create enough mana for my big X spell finishers. So you make a lot of tokens, and then you sack them all to Ashnod's Altar, and then you cast a giant Exsanguinate or Villainous Wealth or, you know, something like that, something fun.
You got Genesis Wave in there?
Genesis Wave, yeah, that's in there. Some creatures that have X center casting costs, like the new clone from the commander set, Gigantoplasm. He's fun. Toxic Deluge, well, no, that's life, but it's still helpful to have the creatures out to make mana for a follow-up after you've deluged everyone else. And so I try not to attack with the deck because, you know, that's something I can do with any token deck I make. So it really opens up your mind to some design space you wouldn't typically think of. And Tassigar is a good choice for the deck. I was originally going with Sidisi because she does make tokens when creatures hit the graveyard, but I found they were unnecessary, and Tassigar makes for some terrible choices your opponents have to make, being able to recur all of your token generators back from your graveyard, or possibly deglamour 7 times in a row.
Now, that was horrible. Yeah, you two are colluding. Now, is Sidisi in Tassigar?
No, I decided to leave her out of it. I had enough ways to get stuff into my graveyard without her, and she's just, I don't know, a little lackluster.
She's terrible.
I wouldn't say she's terrible, but she's not right for this deck. If you're doing zombie tribal, Nate, I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah. No, I used to think Tasuga was shite, and Sidisu was really quite good, and I've completely flipped that opinion now.
Yeah. Same here.
Yep.
I tried making Sidisu tribal zombies work, and it's just terrible. She is a terrible, terrible commander. And maybe that's just my own failing there, but if the three of us or four of us agree on that, then maybe there's something to it.
If she said for each creature card that went into the graveyard, you got a zombie,
yes,
rather than for get one if any creatures go in when she activates, I think she'd be usable. But there's not.
Yeah,
enough.
The limit to one is what breaks it.
Yep.
Yeah, breaks it in the wrong way.
So use Kalidus instead.
Kalidus is amazing, but he's only one of black.
Yeah. He's missing the color line segment.
Yeah. Anyway, big all tokens. Right, so, I suppose that is a token conversation.
Yeah, so that's a good way to lead into big tokens. Nate, you have a voice unlike any other in podcasting. Why don't you lead us off?
Big tokens. Big in this tokens. Series, we will discuss decks that focus on making tokens. Ideally, well, yeah, in every case, lots of them. We're getting the prices from these cards, courtesy of mtgprice.com. And these are some staple cards in green that should... Phil thinks that they should go into nearly every token deck with green in them.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean...
I agree with myself. Aren't I clever?
You know, I agree with that Phil DeLuca guy.
Yeah. I would subscribe to his newsletter.
So we've talked about all of these cards before. So we're just going to run through their names. Oh, we don't have the prices there. Okay, so we're just going to run through their names. Yeah, it is.
I think for this first card, we were discussing a game with this first card.
Yeah. So in one of our lost episodes that we recorded but never released, I proposed a drinking game where whenever you're listening to a podcast and they mention the card Doubling Season, then you need to take a drink. So our first card is... Doubling Season, 4 and a green enchantment, and it doubles the number of tokens you put into play, and it doubles the number of counters you put into play.
Hold on a second, Nate.
And Phil's taking a drink.
That's any podcast, by the way, listeners. Not just ours.
All right.
Any Magic podcast.
Any podcast. So we suggest that you conceal the container and in some way camouflage it if you're driving.
Do you suggest I listen to my podcast concurrently or consecutively, Phil?
Well, we will eventually suggest that you listen to them concurrently, but start with consecutive. You need to really break that liver in.
And if you're underage, please enjoy your fruit juice.
Responsibly.
Next card, Parallel Lives, 3 and a green enchantment. You get double the number of tokens. It doesn't do anything with counters. Next up is Primal Vigor, 4 and a green enchantment. Everybody gets double tokens, and everybody gets double counters.
Everyone gets plus one.
Don't counters. Do it.
Planeswalkers don't get the counters off that one.
Oh, yeah. It's just the plus ones that get put on creatures.
Which is why Primal Vigor is like a $7 card, and Doubling Season's a $30 card.
Which is shocking to me. I mean, I understand that Doubling Season needs to be, is worth about $30. But Primal Vigor at $7? Who is playing with this card in EDH? Because we generate so many tokens, you can't help but give your opponents the same effect and your a similar benefit.
Yeah.
I mean, I have stopped when I finally realized that we were all playing tokens in one way or another, I just stopped playing this. I stopped playing Fecundity because I'm like,
Get out.
No symmetrical effects.
I'm not giving you dragons.
I would give you a dragon, Nate.
Oh, thanks.
But only one.
All right. So our honorable mention staple for today's counter to token conversion commanders is Hardened Scales. It's just one green. It's so cheap. Enchantment.
Oh, but so good.
If you're going to put plus one counters on a creature, just put another one on there too.
Yep. You know, anytime you're putting any plus one counters on a creature, just add one. Just top it off.
That's a key card in these three commanders in particular, particularly Garve/Gave. You can break Garve. Can we just decide on what we're saying for that commander?
I thought Garve
or Gave.
I'm saying Garve.
It's Garve.
Garve.
All right. Okay. We're going to go with Garve.
I don't gave a...
So, yeah, Hardened Scales breaks Garve really badly because he allows you to put +1/+1 tokens back onto your creatures. +1/+1 counters, sorry, not +1/+1 tokens. He's really good.
It also breaks Dagatar.
Dagatar.
So today's commanders are, like Dagatar, 0/0 legendary creatures that enter the battlefield with a number of +1/+1 counters.
Dagatar.
And they also can, at instant speed,
without tapping,
spend mana to convert +1/+1 counters into token creatures and among other abilities. And each one of these commanders has a different trick that they can do or two with those mana and counters. Mm-hmm. The tokens that they create are usually 1/1. They're usually green, and they don't have any special abilities. There are Saprolings and there are Elementals.
Sad moment of silence here because we have no 1/1 green elemental token.
No?
Nope.
No.
Somebody has one.
Nobody does.
Oh, man.
We'd have to make them up.
So, Sean, who's the first commander?
The first commander is... my personal favorite and the only token commander I have ever built around. Garve, Guru of Spores. He's a 2 and an Abzan, which is black, green, white. He is a legendary creature, Fungus Shaman. Garve, Guru of Spores, and spatters with 5 +1/+1 counters on him. You can pay 1 generic mana to remove a +1/+1 counter from a creature you control and put a 1/1 green Saproling creature token onto the battlefield. Or you can pay 1 generic mana to sacrifice
from any creature.
From any creature, from a creature you control. You can sacrifice a creature to put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. So, he's pretty amazing. The really good trick to do with him, if you swing with a load of creatures and they don't block Garve, but they block all your other stuff, sacrifice all the other things, make Garve massive, and kill them with commander damage. Yep. So they kind of have to block him. If they've played against him before, they'll learn that trick. My deck list is up. The link will be in the show notes for my Garve deck. Phil, what's your commander?
Oh. Well, mine is Marath, Will of the Wild, and Marath comes in at a single Naya, or red, green, and white, so 3 converted mana cost. And Marath has 3 abilities that are similar to that. So Marath, Will of the Wild, enters the battlefield with a number of +1/+1 counters on it equal to the amount of mana spent to cast it. So as a commander, you want Marath. Marath will occasionally die, sometimes deliberately. And so Marath becomes more expensive as the game goes on, but retains value because you continue to add more counters each time Marath is cast. And for X, you can remove X +1/+1 counters from Marath and choose one. You put X +1/+1 counters on target creatures, so you can move it from Marath to another creature. Or Marath deals X damage to target creature or player. Or...
there you go.
That is very nice, by the way. Or put an XX green elemental creature token onto the battlefield.
There's a small piece of oracle text on that, isn't there? X cannot be 0.
X cannot be 0. Otherwise, you could create an infinite number of 0/0 elemental creatures and break aspects of the game. It's worth noting that Garve costs about $5 to $6 bucks, depending on where you get it, and Marath costs 75 cents to 92 cents. So I've created 2 Marath decks, one that is really combo-focused, and it uses tokens to do that, and then another one that is more akin, more in the style that we like to play, which is fewer combos, and that one is more straight tokens, and like Nick said earlier in the intro, beat people up with your tokens. These aren't necessarily fuel, although as a side effect, they do fuel the joy. Nick can speak to his, but Nick has a wonderful Marath deck as well. It's kind of like Ulasht on crack.
Yeah.
But sort of begging for money on the street, teeth are falling out.
They will do anything for £14.
And we mean anything.
After dark.
I love
boop. Now, Sean, you've identified some tricks, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of tricks you can do with both of these commanders. We are going to save a lot of the ones we talk about because we are going to, in a future episode, talk about Selesnya token creators specifically. In fact, it'll be the next installment of big tokens. So we're not going to go into too many too fast, if you know what I mean. Cards like Aura Shards and stuff we're going to touch upon, but we're going to really go into them next time.
Right.
But after we've talked about this next commander, we'll talk about some of the tech for these specific commanders. But yeah, if you hear us talking about these and you think, why aren't they talking about this card? If it's a Selesnya card, we haven't forgotten it. If it's not a Selesnya card, we might have forgotten it. Tweet us and we'll go, oh yeah, look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. Tweet at us your favorite Selesnya card and we'll see if it's already in the show notes. And if not, we'll add it and call you out for it. sorry. I mean, if listeners, if we didn't reserve the Selesnya cards for the Selesnya episode, we would, you know, that episode would be really short and it would kind of sound like, Reese.
We do love it when people tell us just how wrong we are as well. It is one of our favorite things.
And Dagatar. We are wrong so often. Yeah, yeah. Dagatar. Oh, and don't forget the overload thing, which we have already apologized for
wrong
in,
all
on
the
Twitter.
Time.
Yeah,
like, I don't claim to be some sort of oracle.
The Strionic Resonator.
That's great.
Look, I got my two bits of undervalued equipment or artifacts wrong. Okay.
And Rings of Brightearth are not undervalued.
I'm not saying that I'm Magic Jesus. That's for you guys to decide. And moving on.
I thought that was Sheldon. Commander.
Yeah, he's Commander Jesus.
No, that was Jason Holt.
Isn't he Jesus?
Because he said everyone should be nice to each other.
I remember. Commander Jesus created the 75% rule so he could die for our sins. and get bitched out on Reddit over and over again. Hey, how do you tell me how I could play my game? I want to play it how I want to play it. Well, guys, I didn't say you had to do it. Anyway.
Well, as we all know, we should deride people who use tutors and then turn around and use them like two at a time.
Two at a turn.
Or seven times with a Runescarred Demon.
I, sir, have never derided anyone that uses tutors. People that use tutors are not only better Magic players, but they're more handsome and kind.
And on the cover of GQ.
Listeners, as an aside, there's a Highlander format, 100-card Highlander format. It's not Commander, but it rates cards. Like, you get 7 points to spend on cards because there are some abusive cards, and tutors are rated highly. Sean, what did your Lazav deck come in
at? It wasn't my Lazav deck. It was my Jared deck.
Oh, yes, that's right. You're Jared.
So most decks that are considered powerful in that format score 7. 7 is the score.
Also when you're constructing according to those rules, that's the maximum.
Yeah.
But you're taking your EDH deck and comparing it to their scoring system.
It's fine. Right. It's fine. It was a fairly good comparison. My Jared deck scored 17.
Oh, 17. Okay.
Only 17. Basically, if you took a powerful card in black and green, I had it in that deck. And it was a good deck. You've all played against it. It was efficient. And
yeah.
Anyway, moving on. This next commander, which Nick's going to discuss, can I just say, the first time I ever played against this commander was Nick's version of this deck.
Yes,
and when he whipped it out of his deck, I went, that's rubbish. I'm going to beat this noob into the ground. Who's ever used this card?
Story of Sean's life. Every time.
Falling to hubris.
In fairness, I had a similar reaction. I was like, oh, that's Marath, but with one less color, so whatever.
Nick, tell us about this commander.
I appreciate you keeping the best commander for last, guys.
It has nothing to do with alphabetical order. Are you being attacked by wild
dogs?
Yeah,
one second, guys. I got to shut them up.
Shut up, dog! Shut up!
I showed respect.
You did. I did not. And it resoundingly kicked the shite out of me.
I thought maybe it was going to be brutal, but that we would probably be able to control it. That was the first time we ever played Nick. Well, second.
Yep.
Or third. Because he played Reese for quite some time and was just brutal. And then he shows up with this and it's like, oh, what does this do? It was a card I always intended to purchase and never quite got around to doing it. And then somebody sent me a copy.
Who was that, Phil?
This is the break we take in the show when
that
Nick
was somebody
gets
who...
eaten by dogs.
No, that, well, most of this is airworthy. Who was that? That was a charming gentleman who would later go on to incredible podcast fame.
That was nice of you, Sean. So, Ulash the Hate Seed comes into play with 1/1 counter for each other red creature you control, and a 1/1 counter on it for each other green creature you control. Side note, red-green creatures will give it 2 1/1 counters for one colorless mana. Remove a 1/1 counter from Ulash.
No.
Wait, you were right. It is one generic mana.
Generic, I'm sorry. Ulash will deal 1 damage to target creature or put a 1/1 green sapperling creature token into play. And I should have noted he does cost 2, a red and a green.
And it's Ulash, really, that kind of caused us to give you... It's Ulash and then the frequent gruel colors appearing in your deck that cause us to call you Nick Jaragrulski.
I appreciate that. I've started using it on all the legal documents that I signed.
Ulasht costs about $1.50 to $1.75 right now.
Yeah, it's gone up since I got to buy it from the bulk bin that I saw at Gen Con a couple years ago for 50 cents.
Yeah, yeah. And what's interesting is it's actually down from when you sent me that copy of Ulasht, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I still, it's one half of a trade. We have to complete the trade. And we'll complete it at the original $2 value. I do have a way to complete that trade, and we'll see if we can do that. All of these decks will be put up under the Commander and MTG account on deckstats.net. So please head on over to deckstats and search for us there and take a look. We may temporarily put these in a special big tokens folder. Otherwise, they'll be in the guests and then our individual folders, which encourages you to explore. And of course, you know, if you feel like rating them, go ahead. We don't mind. So, Nate, what's the strategy of these decks?
Well, you make a lot of tokens.
Yeah.
And then you use them as a resource to maybe draw cards or generate mana or just go wide and smash somebody in the face. If you buff the team, like if you can do something tribal and, hey, all of your tokens are the same type, then there you go. And then you win.
That's an in-depth analysis there, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, you are probably better at token deck playing than any of us, right? You certainly use it as your signature rather than having just one single signature commander. We know that whatever commander you put down, it's going to be followed by about a billion tokens. So how do you do it?
So the trick to playing tokens is knowing how many to put on the field at the same time. A lot of commander players get into the bad habit of, oh, I have this card in my hand. That means I should play it. And in a game full of Wrath of Gods and Austere Commands and massacre worms, that's really not the best strategy when you're using tokens. So I would say the single most important thing would be to keep some of your big token generators back in your hand, because if the game goes long, you are going to need them. The only exception to that would be if you have maybe a haste enabler that you can cast in the same turn, then, you know, go for it. And if you're going to win against everybody, but otherwise, you know, think about it before you cast it.
So in general, they basically convert your available mana into token creatures. But then Ulasht in particular is kind of reverse that strategy. Ulasht really enjoys having buddies on the battlefield. So you'll often use, we see you, when you play Ulasht, we'll see that you will cast a bunch of spells and put a bunch of tokens out on the battlefield and then bring Ulasht out.
Yeah, in that respect, Ulasht is probably the weakest of these three, where he can't function without a team on the field already. Merith and Gave don't have that problem, but I like the challenge of that, and it just makes for more interesting gameplay for me. And it also means that with Ulasht specifically, you have to use a lot of mana dorks, where normally that would be a bad idea, but you need the creatures on the field with him to get anything going. So mana dorks, if you look at my deck lists, are pretty prominent.
Yeah. So now, Nate, you've done some analysis on this. How do you convert all of this power into tokens?
Okay. So there's one thing you can do. If you have a creature with high power, there are a couple ways to convert that creature's power into tokens. One of them is Elemental Mastery in 3 and a red, Enchantment Aura, Enchant Creature. Enchanted Creature has, you tap it, put X, 1/1 red Elemental Creature tokens with haste into play, where X is the creature's power. Remove them from the game at end of turn. So Purphoros decks probably want this. And if you've got green, there's Fungal Sprouting for 3 and a green. Sorcery, you can just do it once. Put X, 1/1 green sapling creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control.
Oh, yeah. So you can only do it once, but those creatures don't vaporize at the end of the turn.
Yeah, that's a fantastic
card. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Elemental Mastery kind of begs for Sundial of the Infinite, right?
Or just a way to turn those tokens into something else before the turn ends.
That's true.
One of my favorite cards to play in this kind of deck is Skull Mulcher.
Ooh, Skull Mulcher.
Oh, that's clever. I don't like that.
So if you're going to be using Elemental Mastery, Skull Mulcher, when he comes into play, he has Devour 1 for each creature he devours. When he comes into play, you put a 1/1 counter on Skull Mulcher and draw a card. And at the end of the turn, if you're going to get rid of those elementals anyway, why not draw 50 cards?
Yeah, that's pretty good. We should put that in the the secret tech section.
So Elemental Mastery is about $5 and Fungal Sprouting is about 20 cents.
Right.
Yes. Wow, all the cards from Lorwyn Block really are quite pricey, aren't they?
Well, yeah, because they tend to be tribal-oriented and fairly powerful on the spectrum. Since all of these commanders put a whole bunch of creatures out, we want to be able to buff the team, right? And we have divided this section into obvious cards and secret tech. I would really like to lead off with this card. It's one of my favorite Magic cards. Not my favorite, but one of them.
And you've never mentioned it before, have you?
Never mentioned it before. except every time I mention a deck with white in it. Cathar's Crusade, the enchantment that whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So Marath really likes this, because as you spawn elementals, and obviously everybody, every one of them likes this, but except Ulasht. As you spawn creatures, you can do it again as long as you have mana, with other cards.
And the creature that just came in gets a counter,
yeah,
too,
and the
right?
creature that came in gets a counter. So you stack a bunch of 1-1 effects up, and whatever you do, don't actually stack it. You want to do them one at a time. But yeah, so as
if you
do
play,
that...
Sorry, if you play, say, Secure the Wastes for 5, which puts 5-1-1 tokens in, they all see each other come in.
Yeah, so. They all see each other come in. But with Marath, what you're doing is you're putting one in at a time, and then you end up with a Calliope, if you will, of power and toughness, where the last one has the smallest power and toughness, but the first one you put out onto the battlefield until you ran out of mana is huge, absolutely huge. And right now, because it was reprinted in Commander 2015, it's only a 65-cent to dollar card.
Nice.
So pick it up. Yeah. Pick it up. You should have it.
Great card. Combos with a lot of other cards.
Yeah.
So many. It's a good card in Garve. What it allows you to do with Garve is you can put, basically for 2 mana, you can put 2 +1/+1 counters on Garve. Because you create a dude who comes in, you kill him to put a +1/+1 counter on Garve. But when the guy comes in the first time, you put an additional +1/+1 on Garve. So you just go, I'm going to keep making my commander huge. And what you'll notice with the theme with the Golgari guy over the other guys here is that the Golgari guy tends to make things big rather than go wide. You can make a lot of guys and make them super flexible, but you can also make one thing massive. And this is one of the key components for it.
Mm-hmm.
Next is Murragonda Petroglyphs for 3 and a green enchantment. Creatures with no abilities, such as tokens, most tokens, they get +2/+2. For $1.24 to $1.50, about.
So your flying lifelink vampires won't get any benefit from this, but all of the creatures produced by, I'll pronounce it, Gave and Marath and Ulasht, they all get this bonus.
Yeah, it's almost like a mini Beastmaster Ascension.
Yep. And then we have 2 cards that are very similar. So we'll, you know, it's Overrun. It's a sorcery for 2 and green. Creatures you control get +3/+3 and gain trample until end of turn. And that's a quarter. Overwhelming Stampede for 3 and green. So the same converted mana cost, but this one's rare. Until end of turn, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. So anybody playing token decks probably realizes that they want Overwhelming Stampede in their deck before they put Overrun in. Now, if you have room for 2, of course, you put them both in.
And that costs between 1 and 2 gumballs.
Yes, I was just going to reference that. Our friends at the Commander's Brew, this is a Overwhelming Stampede is a 2 gumball card, and Overrun is a 1 gumball card.
I think our next cards are, we're still in the same category. Yeah. Pathbreaker Ibex, 4 and green. Creature Goat, 3/3. Whenever Pathbreaker Ibex attacks, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. The next one, we all know this one. Take a drink. Craterhoof Behemoth, 5 green. Creature Beast, 5/5, haste. When Craterhoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and gain +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. And that one's about a $20 card.
Yeah, that's a lot of gumballs.
But if Phil has it in his graveyard when I get my Liliana Vess ultimate off, then all my elves have about 44, and then I hit you for 823 points of damage.
This is why I wake up screaming from that game.
Well, that's your fault for having a Craterhoof Behemoth in your graveyard.
Behemoth is a real, it's a bit like Avacyn. There's a few other good creatures like it. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword where occasionally you're going to lose to your own copy of that card.
Yeah. If you have a lot of in your meta of people stealing from your graveyard or ripping from your library with like bribery, you might want to consider Pathbreaker instead of Craterhoof. It gets you almost the same effect, and Pathbreaker is also really good with a new card, Deceiver of Forms.
Yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, that is a good card.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of mean man would steal stuff from you or rip things out of your library?
There's a reason now that I put Homeward Path in all of my decks, Sean.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you do.
If I find the person that designed that card, I'm going to kick him in the crotch.
Right, you know, it's funny. I finally built a deck where controlling other people's creatures actually matters. And I'm like, oh, God, I've got to have plenty of answers for Homeward Path. So it's worth noting that Pathbreaker Ibex is basically overwhelming Stampede on a stick. And it costs $2, so somewhat pricey in a gumball, using gumball metrics. Craterhoof has bounced up. It's now $18 to $19.
It's 36 gumballs if you're getting a cheap one.
Yeah, Jesus. That's, and that one's all gumballs. Beat up and barely worth showing.
Yeah. This card will not be featured on the Commander's Brew.
Yeah, I don't... We'll have an interesting contrast to that a little bit later, maybe a couple of episodes down the line. But I don't think many of these cards end up on Commander's Brew.
No.
Yeah, this next one is a Planeswalker that fits in. It's Garrick Wildspeaker for 2 and green. +1 ability, untap 2 target lands. -1 ability, put a 3/3 green beast creature token onto the battlefield. But then its ultimate is -4, creatures you control get +3/+3, and gain trample until end of turn. That's awfully nice.
Yeah, that's killed me before, that ultimate. And because I just thought, oh, it's a -4, it's going to be rubbish, isn't it? Like, it goes off really quickly, and just ignored it and then got lethaled in the face. Once again, dying to my own hubris.
People don't give Garruk the respect, this particular Garruk, the respect it deserves. They see it and, oh, it's not, no, untap 2 lands, but he gets the +4 really quick, guys, so just look out.
Yeah, and of course, if you have a doubling season out, or if you're using Oath of Gideon, he comes in with the ability to ultimate.
The other thing with this Garruk, if you're like our friend Josh Lee Kwai over at the Command Zone podcast, you use a lot of land auras instead of mana rocks.
Yeah.
That untapped 2 target lands becomes super, super value town.
Yeah.
If you've got Market Festival and... But there's numerous ones. But yeah, he is an underrated Planeswalker.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's gone up in value a bit lately as well, actually. I'm
sure. Yeah, he has. He's gone...
$5.
Yeah, exactly. I picked one up for about $4, and it wasn't very long ago. It was just before my trip to Tokyo. And yeah, he's crept up. He's almost doubled in price since then.
People must be tuning on to him. Now, this next card has been kicking the nonsense out of me for many, many years. I've died to this in all formats many times. Normally of elves piling it, but
normally Nate using it as a combat trick.
What a combat trick it is. Can I read it? It's Coat of Arms. 5 mana for an artifact. Each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature in play that shares a creature type with it. For example, if Goblin Warrior, Goblin Scout, and Zombie Goblin are in play, each of them get +2/+2. So I think the explanation text there makes that sound more complicated than it is. Important note on this card, though, if you're dropping it and you don't kill your opponent, and your opponent is also playing a tribal or token strategy, you're dying back. Because that is a linear effect. There's each creature, not each creature you control. Sorry, yes, not linear, symmetrical. I always say that, don't I?
And your creature is also looking at your opponent's creatures. So if you're both running goblins...
Oh, God. Yeah, it gets tricky to play this because you don't want to play it when your opponent's tribe is untapped.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you don't play it until you have... You don't play it early. You wait until you're... You play it right before combat, basically, to win. So hold it in your hand and don't play it early.
Or if you have a Vidalkin Orrery out or a Prophet of... Then you drop this in the middle of combat. I'm simultaneously both still in denial and celebrating.
It's been mostly so nice playing lately without... Someone going, I'm in a crucifix. And I was one of those people, so yeah.
Yeah. Incidentally, if anybody would like a Japanese foil Prophet of Crucifix, let me know.
So is there a card like Coat of Arms that's less dangerous to play, but maybe a bit slower and cheaper? Oh, Coat of Arms, incidentally, is about $8. So I'll take that back. Some of you might have seen the card Door of Destinies, but which...
It does a similar effect, coat of arms. It gets charge tokens on it and make your creatures bigger, but it's only when you cast creatures of the chosen type, so it doesn't really work with Marith, Garve, or Ulasht, because they don't cast, they just put into play.
Well, it's more likely to work with Marith than either of the other two.
Why?
Because you're constantly recasting Marith.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah. But probably not enough reason to include it.
No, probably not. I've died to this next card a few times. Someone else read it, because I hate it.
Nick?
Mirror Entity. 2 and a white for a changeling. Pay X. Until end of turn, creatures you control have base power and toughness XX and gain all creature types. And it costs you about 2 to 3 gumballs.
Yep. It's a wonderful card. That changing the base power and toughness... for all of these commanders, which enter the battlefield as 0/0s with +1/+1 counters on top of them, this is an amazing card. Of course, you can trick it. You can do all sorts of wonderful tricks with Reveal Arc and other cards like that. You can even go infinite with some of these. But even if you're not going infinite and just using these to boost your token army, goodness gracious.
Yeah, that artwork always makes me think I need to change my medication.
It's crazy. That art is amazing.
Whoever painted that.
It really is. It's creepy. Like, you look at that and you realize when you see what is being depicted in there.
So he's got Groot and Iron Man inside of his stomach.
He does. I never noticed that it was Groot before. I saw the Iron Man a few times. I am Groot. This card just makes me, it annoys me because I've died to it, but I have mindslaved someone who's had their mirror entity out before, attacked someone over with a big overpowered mirror entity, and then reused the mirror entity to set it to 0. Am I a bad human being?
No, it's the risk you play, you run, yes. Rather when, well, yeah, okay, maybe so, but it is the risk you run when you play mirror entity.
Yeah, if someone somehow takes over your turn, there's only a couple of ways of doing it, Mindslaver and Worst Fears, but I play them both in my Esper Seng Trippet's control deck, and it's just like, cool, I'm going to have you. Whoa.
Fun fact, this ability is also excellent with Sundial of the Infinite.
Yes, because it's until end of turn, you can cut it off to the end of turn. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Sundial of the Infinite's a broken card. Why does it not get abused more?
Because as soon as it appears, people hate on it.
Yeah, that's true. So this next card is a card I've died to a lot of times. I've noticed this is a theme appearing.
You're talking to people who really, really enjoy playing token decks.
Yeah.
And if it's a card that's killed you, then it goes into this category.
I love this card. It's... Beastmaster Ascension. For 2 and a green, you get an enchantment that says, whenever a creature you control attacks, you may put a quest counter on Beastmaster Ascension. That's pretty important. As long as Beastmaster Ascension has 7 or more quest counters on it, creatures you control get +5/+5. Now, you cast this just before combat, and similar to Coat of Arms, you then attack in with 7 creatures, let's say. And you instantly get the +5/+5 benefit, and it's permanent, and it lasts even on your opponent's turn. So it's sort of like the best part of Overrun permanently. It's glorious.
First time I played against this, I presumed that you got the quest counters upon damage trigger, combat damage trigger. I thought surely it won't be on the attack trigger, otherwise this card will be silly. It is silly. Is what I discovered.
Yep. So you play it with its new friends Pathbreaker Ibex and Deceiver of Forms, and shenanigans ensue.
And like Coat of Arms, you don't want to cast this when you can. You want to cast it when it's going to immediately change the landscape of the battlefield. Just because you have 3 mana doesn't mean you play it.
I have occasionally been forced to play it early because I was looking at the mana curve, but otherwise, yeah, you wait until you have 7 creatures on the board ready to attack.
I would treat it almost like a sorcery speed spell. Like a sorcery speed overrun that just hangs around.
Indeed. All right, and that's our last card.
Phil, you forgot a card.
Oh, yeah, there's one
no,
more.
That's the end of...
I'll read it. Triumph of the Hordes, 2 green sorcery. Until end of turn, creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain trample and in fact...
Ooh. I hate this card, and I'm a Phyrexian guy. It feels a cheap way to win.
It really is.
I had it in some decks.
I think it's about equivalent as Crater of Behemoth.
No, except half the mana cost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it in some decks, but it did feel too easy mode.
Yeah, you took it out, didn't you, Nick, after I just sat there and went, oh, well, that was a great way.
Yeah, I had hurt Sean's feelings, and I don't like to do that.
Yes, you do. There is a card that's missing off this list. So Triumph of the Hordes, if your group's okay with Infect, you're like, your meta, then fine. I would check with your group how they feel about Infect if it's not already a thing before putting in a deck, personally.
No, good people don't play this card.
It only costs about 3 gumballs.
There is a card we're missing here, guys, that isn't on our list at all, which surprises me. It's Phil's favorite card, Elesh Norn, Grand Cenobite. How did we forget her and how to buff the whole team? I don't even need her in front of me to tell you exactly what that card does. She's 5/2 white for a 4/7 creature, legendary creature, Praetor. She creatures you control gain +2/+2, and creatures your opponents control gain -2/-2, and she has vigilance. Now, that's obviously powerful, so we don't need to discuss it. I'm going to ask Phil a question. Phil, you often complain that that card is just easy mode for white, and you just stick it in any white deck, and you're bored of it because you see it in every white deck. Would you complain if you saw it in a token deck, bearing in mind what it does? It plays into the strategy rather than just playing into being good.
Elesh Norn is too expensive. The converted mana cost is way too high for most token decks. You have better uses for your mana.
Gentlemen's opinions? Bearing in mind, almost every token deck plays with Crater of Behemoth, which is more than Elesh Norn. Nick?
It does wreck the board for 7 mana. So I respect that.
It does indeed.
A 4-point power and toughness swing is really huge. And it's in my Garve deck and has won me games, Elesh Norn. So it's done a quote-unquote Crater of Behemoth for me before. I've just gone, right, drop Elesh Norn, swing, dead. But yeah, I just wondered if you, Phil, would have more flexibility about the card if she was playing into the actual strategy, wasn't just in the card, is in the deck because it's good.
Are we on to secret tech?
Anyway.
No, there's no denying that that effect is powerful. If it costs 1 more mana, I would feel a little bit differently about it being a crutch. But, you know, it doesn't take a lot of imagination to play Elesh Norn.
It's a fun card to steal from your opponent.
It is. It is.
Oh, it is. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, and that falls under the just desserts category.
Elesh Norn gets the Sean seal of approval. Double thumbs up. This card is Demir approved, even though it's not black or blue. It's Esper approved, I guess. But
insert metal stamp sound effect.
Ka-chong! Ka-chong! Do you not like friends? Then you should get some of these Sean approved cards. Guaranteed to make your playgroup hate you. Anyway, secret tech. What do we mean by secret tech, guys?
So by secret tech, we mean cards that maybe aren't obvious for token strategies. The cards maybe aren't obvious. This is sort of very subjective. And a lot of people might look at these cards and at first blush go, I don't really think there's a lot of synergy here. So... since they don't directly support the strategy of making tokens and beating people at efficient mana value. And the first of these is a fairly new card, and it's Dragon Throne of Tarkir. For 4 generic mana, you get a legendary artifact equipment, and it says equipped creature has Defender, and for 2 generic mana and tap, other creatures you control gain trample and get plus X until end of turn, where X is this creature's power. And it has equipped 3 as a cost. And the reason that most people kind of overlook this is because people are generally focused on, you know, making the most of their commander and using that commander for commander damage and doing all sorts of things. But with these commanders in particular, they tend to sit out of combat because they have their minions do the work for them. And if you're going to do that, then you might as well strap the Dragon Throne onto them.
You are spending 9 mana before it does anything.
Yeah. It's expensive. It's hideously expensive. So for 9 mana, you get a 1-turn boost equal to your commander's power. But if you've got something like Gave or Marath out, where they're effectively generating an infinite number of counters on them, so their power is up around 7 when you start that, and it maintains at 7, you can strap this onto them and give all of those little creatures that you've created +7/+7 and trample every turn you attack. That doesn't suck. Unless you have 9 mana up, it does sort of telegraph what your strategy is. But if you've got an army of 1/1s and it doesn't look like you can attack in, this also makes a nice combat trick, albeit for 9 mana.
And if they're spot removing this artifact, if you're disenchanting or a disenchant effect, a Dragon Throne at Tarkir,
yeah.
How lousy does that feel?
So yeah, exactly.
But there's normally something better for my precious Crozan grip. But Jesus,
right? This falls under the category of you have to answer this, and at the same time, I am not going to be sad if you blow your Naturalize or your, you know, Deglamour, Unravel the Aether on it, because that means that my Doubling Season gets to come out, or my Mana Echoes, or insert incredibly powerful broken card here.
And that is Dragonlord Kolaghan's skull that they've made the throne out of.
Yes, as Command Zone calls it, K-Mol.
Yes.
And again, this is a bargain at basically a gumball. 24 cents to 33 cents.
I wish we could speak about a card that was, you know, a lot more gumballs.
Like maybe one from the Lorwyn block?
Oh, yeah, that would be nice. They're all a lot of gumballs, aren't they?
You want to read this, or you want?
Hey, I'll read this. This is a card that's in Garve, actually. So it's 3 and it's Vigor, I should say, before I read how it does. Vigor. 3 and triple green for creature elemental incarnation. It's a 6/6 creature with trample. If damage would be dealt to a creature you control other than Vigor, prevent that damage and put a +1/+1 counter on that creature for each 1 damage prevented this way. When Vigor is put into a graveyard anywhere, shuffle it into its owner's library.
So,
yeah.
My favorite time that I've ever cast this card was in a Riku deck. I had Vigor out with a bunch of tokens, and I decided to cast and copy Blasphemous Act.
Oh my god, poor Nick.
Nick, come back to us.
Blasphemous Act.
He spoke about the Blasphemous Act.
So Nick, while Nick's being eaten by dogs, I will note that, yes, Vigor and Blasphemous Act worked very well. Vigor and Pestilence Demon worked pretty well.
I'm pretty sure double Blasphemous Act doesn't do anything, though, because the first Blasphemous Act kills the Vigor, and then the second Blasphemous Act resolves
right.
And does jack all.
But if you have a bunch of 2/2 zombies and Vigor, and you have a Pestilence Demon, then ping, 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 ping.
Only 5 pings.
Well, just a note, I had to double cast the Blasphemous Act because somebody on the other side had a creature power toughness greater than 13.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. Right, yeah.
And so this is another great candidate. If you've got the Dragon thrown out, you strap it to Vigor because you're not going to send Vigor into combat. Vigor is so much more useful as essentially an enchantment with legs. And, you know, you've probably got plenty of ways to put trample on your creatures. As, you know, if you've got an army of 7/7s, I certainly hope so. So generally the way I use Vigor is it sits out of combat and the minions go forth and simply get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? What's the downside? After after an exchange with a Avacyn, your elemental is now a 9/9 elemental.
Jeez.
Sorry.
Vigor's good fun in any teamer deck.
where you have Nin the Pain Artist. Because Nin becomes tap X and a blue and a red to put X plus one counters on a creature and draw X cards.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's good. I know it's not a token strategy, again, but it is an interesting use for Vigor.
Yeah. And Vigor is, this one's a little bit pricey. There's a Duels of the Planeswalker version, so that came out as a promo if you redeemed the Duels of the Planeswalker cards, and that's $15 right now. And the Lorwyn version is $15 to $17.
Yeah, that's gone up again. That's gone up recently as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Beautiful artwork on Vigor. Sorry.
Yeah. Now, this next one is one that I've most recently seen Nick use.
Yeah, Sarkhan Vol, 2 red and a green. He's a planeswalker with 4 loyalty counters. +1, creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain haste until end of turn. Or you can -2, gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste. Or for -6, put 5 4/4 red dragon creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. So for a token strategy, the +1 and the -6 are your two big ones that you want to be focusing on. It's basically another Yavimaya card or Fervor or Concord and Crossroads. You're just another way to give them haste. And on the other end, if you have Doubling Season out, it's an instant 10 4/4 dragons on the field, which I've done to Sean at least once as a repayment for all the Narset ultimate he gets on me.
It's all right. That's a great card. A note on Planeswalkers in token decks. They're really good in token decks because you've normally always got protection for the Planeswalker because you've got little chump blockers all over the place often. And one of the problems of Planeswalkers, if they don't have an ability like Elspeth Sun's Champion to protect themselves, they tend to get punked as soon as they come down. But no, token strategies, they're really, really powerful to build into.
Yeah, and there's another Gruul commander, or not commander, Planeswalker that does really well with tokens. I don't see it on the list, but it's Xenagos of the Reveler. You were just using him earlier today, Sean, but...
Yes, I was.
For the same mana cost, 2 red and green, you get a Planeswalker with 3 loyalty counters. For +1, you can add any amount of red or green mana to your mana pool equal to the number of creatures you control, and you can split that any way you want. So if you've got 10 creatures, you can get 5 and 5, or 2 and 8, or whatever you need. So it's like a Gaia's Cradle, except better, and a lot cheaper. Or you can +0 and get a 2/2 red green satyr token with haste. Or for -6, you can reveal the top 6 cards from your library and put any creatures and or land cards from them into play. The rest go into your graveyard.
Sort of micro Genesis Wave.
Yeah, just a little mini Genesis Wave, you know. It's another card that I like to ultimate on Sean.
Oh God, I hate you. I hate you so much. Nick is the person I play more at Magic than anybody, by the way. So we have a fairly in-depth knowledge of each other's playstyles and abilities. Yeah, I hate you, Jarogoski.
Hey, speaking of, Robin Koss also mentioned that when he played his paper group recently and he realized that his deck construction and play had just become so much more vicious because of the way we all play test together. Have you guys seen that effect as well?
Well, if my local play group would allow me to play with them anymore, I might say so, but...
I don't have any other baseline.
I've noticed. I mean, mine was pretty... Because, I mean, listener Pete plays in my paper group, and you guys have played him, so you know what his decks do. Unrelenting. So what I found is my paper groups have tended to go more towards a lot more answers, so a lot more counter spells and removal. I don't know if they've necessarily got spikier, but it's harder to pull off silly things than it used to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it does. And so these two planeswalkers, the what with their being planeswalkers, are somewhat pricey, and Sarkhan's an old one and sees a lot of play. He's last printed in Modern Masters the first
Modern Masters,
and so he's about $11.50. And Xenagos the Reveler is also not a cheap card, but certainly off as high as $17, is down to $4 to $4.30 or so.
He's cheap for a planeswalker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most planeswalkers are 7 to 12.
And just to correct myself, I said the cards off of Xenagos' ultimate get put in the graveyard. It's actually exiled, so just to correct myself there.
Hmm. Yep.
So these are expensive mythics. Surely there are no good commons on this list.
Not at all. Wait, Ivy Lane Denizen for 3 and a green. You get an elf warrior, which we have all come to hate.
Uh-huh.
All of us hate elf warriors.
I mean hate.
Oh, yeah. Whenever another green creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. So a very limited but still effective Cathar's Crusade.
This is great for Marith and Ulash because you remove a counter to make a token and you immediately put another counter back on Marith or Ulash.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good with Garve as well. You create a green sapperling and put a token back onto. So you get ultimate, you get basically free token, free 1/1 sapperling creatures.
Boo.
Not bad for a common card from Gatecrash.
Yeah, that's going to cost you a lot of money, though, surely.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's about half a gumball, it turns out. we love the Commander's Brew guys, so if you're not listening to it yet, listeners, go take a listen.
Oh, even if you're not interested in budget EDH, which is what they talk about, it's a warm and funny and informative show.
Yeah.
Please check it out.
Yeah, we can't recommend Commander's Brew and the Command Zone, and there are a couple of others that we listen to habitually, but just go listen to those two, and then we'll tell you about the others some other time. This next card is Bloodspore Thrynax, just printed in Commander 15. For 2 and green. Yeah, I guess we do mention it a lot, don't we? Devour 1! Each other creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Bloodspore Thrynax. Hello.
Hey, that goes good with Ivy Lane Denizen.
Goes very well with Ivy Lane Denizen, and this is a good friend of Marath. The beasts and the lizards hang out together.
Yeah.
And then I guess the elemental can turn it into a lizard on a stick.
That's good in all those three commanders that we've talked about for this. It's just fantastic.
Yeah,
just beautiful. Simply fantastic.
And that's 69 cents to about a buck.
Or alternatively, in the Meron deck, if you want to buy that deck, the current commander's set. It's in Meron.
Yeah.
Of Nel'toth. Why couldn't I remember the word Nel'toth? Anyway, it's a good card.
It's two words.
That would be why.
Mycloth's a good card for all these decks while we're talking Devour. It is 4 and 2 green for a 4/4 green fungus creature that has Devour 2, which means when you cast it, you sacrifice blah blah creatures, X number of creatures, and he gets 2 +1/+1 counters for each creature destroyed that way. And then during your upkeep, you put a 1/1 sapperling token into play for each +1/+1 counter on Mycloth. So if you can take the hit for a turn to kill a load of your tokens, you gain value back on them really, really fast. And also, if you're playing in Garve, which has got black, and you have like Grave Pact or something out, you can just dominate the board with it. Mycloth's a fantastic card, and it's just come right down in price because it's just been reprinted. It was getting pricey, but has dropped to only a few bucks now.
I would recommend not eating your entire team of creatures with this card because it just makes it that much easier for your opponents to use a single spot removal spell on it to wipe your entire board. Just 4 or 5 creatures eaten with Mycloth is fine.
4 creatures gets you a 12/12 guy. Let's not forget, even though he's crapping out tokens, he's massive himself as well. Sorry, and I said his casting cost wrong. He's actually 3 and 2 green, not 4 and 2 green. So he's even better. Yeah.
The last card we've listed in Secret Tech, and listeners, you should be absolutely sure to write into us either at cast@commanderandmtg.com or on Twitter or come visit the Facebook page and let us know if we've missed your favorite Secret Tech or obvious tech Our last card is Thelonite Hermit. For 3 and a green, sapling creatures get +1/+1. How did this guy make it on here? It has a morph cost for 3 and green, so you use it as a surprise. The only morph card in a token deck, I'm sure. And then when Thelonite Hermit is turned up, put 4/1/1 green sapling creature tokens onto the battlefield. So this is meant to be a defensive card, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a budget, a sort of different deranged term, isn't it, that puts the squirrels out and does the same for squirrels. What it is good, though, if he's in Garve, your sapling, your commander creates saprolings. The creatures Garve makes from sacking tokens are saprolings. So very good in that deck.
Ulash makes saprolings too, so it's great there as well.
Yeah.
So we have kind of an honorable mention in the secret tech. Nick, you're the one who showed me the error of my ways in not including Rith the Awakener in Marath. Do you want to talk about Rith?
Yeah, so Rith the Awakener is a 6/6 flying dragon, legendary creature. Costs 3 and a Naya, so white, red, and green. And she reads that whenever she deals combat damage to a player, you can pay 2 and a green, and then you choose a color and get a 1/1 sapling into play for every permanent type of that color in play. So not just your own, but if your opponents have permanents of that color, it counts to that as well. If there are 10 green permanents in play, you get 10 1/1 saplings.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely brutal. I had overlooked it in part because I didn't respect this cycle of dragons. But when you used it, I realized what a fool I had been.
And it's fantastic with double strike.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're in the double strike colors.
And Rith the Awakener is about $1.50 right now.
Okay. Now this is my section. If you're playing a token deck and you have red, here's the Purphoros package. Purphoros, God of the Forge. 3 and a red, legendary enchantment creature gods, whatever. He's got stats. He's indestructible. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent. And there's more stuff on the card, but that's the important part. He's about $7 to $7.50. And if you want to go a lot cheaper, for half the mana cost and a lot less actual dollars, Impact Tremors, 1 and a red enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, Impact Tremors deals 1 damage to each opponent. Mm. So if you're just spewing out creatures, just do damage when you do it. Next up, Mana Echoes. We've already mentioned it. It's around $7 to $7.50. And whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if it shares a creature type, then you get some mana. And it adds up. And I'm going to add Confusion in the ranks.
Especially when you're dropping a lot of 1/1 elemental creatures or saprolings, and it costs 1 mana to do each of those, 1 generic mana. Mana Echoes, oh my goodness, pays for itself.
It's a disgusting card.
That's when we limit you to 5 per turn.
Yeah, Mana Echoes is one of the reasons we limit it to 5 times per wheel around the table. Something important to remember about this is if you have Mana Echoes out and you put 1 creature of a particular type into play, it still generates that colorless mana.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
And I'm going to add Confusion in the Ranks. It's an enchantment in red. And whenever you create a creature, you can just trade it with a creature somebody else has. So if you're making 1/1s and somebody else has an Elesh Norn, you can say, here, have my goblin or elemental or sapling, and I'll take that Elesh Norn, and we trade.
Yeah, the funny part of that is, as soon as it enters the battlefield, it's a 0/0 creature. But it has entered the battlefield, so you get Elesh, and they get a corpse.
I see a lot of face palming at my local game store when that card gets played.
Confusion in the ranks. It just
People don't like playing with it or against it. It ruins so many deck strategies.
Oh, I like playing with it.
It was in a chaos deck I built once, but what I found was too many chaos cards make the game either not chaotic at all, just different, or so unplayable you can't play Magic. And that was one of the cards, I thought.
But I think in general, it is chaotic, but it's in your favor if you're making 1/1 tokens.
Yeah, no, you are right.
Usually, yeah.
I remember with your Krenko deck, you hosed me with it once. Said,
I took everything.
Krenko. Oh.
It's all mine. Oh. It's basically an insurrection.
Were we in the same game?
If you have Krenko out and Confusion in the Ranks, then it's basically an insurrection if you tap Krenko.
No. Its controller chooses whenever one of those things... Oh, I see. Never mind. You are correct. All of that will be edited.
Yeah, like when I make a mistake, it all gets edited, yeah?
Only when it's not funny.
Shut up. Right.
Okay, so Marith and Ulasht, they have special powers that they can ping any creature for 1 damage. Hey, maybe you want to add Death Touch. Basilisk Collar for 1. This is an artifact equipment. Equipped creature has Death Touch and Lifelink. Equipped 2. Basilisk Collar is about $8. If you want to go cheaper, there's Gorgon Flail for 2. Equipped creature has +1/+1 and has Death Touch. It's about 2 gumballs. Gorgon's Head for 1. Equipped creature has Death Touch. Equipped 2. It's about a gumball. And then you can go your whole team. Bow of Nylea, 1 green, legendary enchantment artifact. Attacking creatures you control have Death Touch. And it's got some more.
Because if you're using it to deal a point of damage. Oh, I suppose you attack with the commander, then start burning the tokens.
Well, you attack, yeah, and then. Yes.
That one feels less clean to
and
me.
And then ping.
It was beautiful the first time I pulled that off with Marath. Because no one saw it coming, and I was like, okay, and now I'll machine gun that, and that dies, and that dies, and that dies, and that dies. And they were like, what? Why?
Yeah, so you do it right after you're declaring attackers in your combat phase.
Yeah.
Then you activate your commander and ping, 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 Death Touch.
And next one's one of my favorite ever cards.
Quite a Spike for 3 artifact equipment. Equipped creature has Death Touch, and he does... It takes half your life.
Yeah, whenever
equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, deals half your life, rounded up. They lose half their life, rounded up. And that's about 350. Yeah,
that's a nasty card.
It's mean.
I hadn't seen the next one before. It was Nightshade Peddler, 1 and a green. Yeah. Creature human druid with soul bond. That's the key. As long as Nightshade Peddler is paired with another creature, both creatures have Death Touch. And that's
horrible.
That's less than a gumball.
Horrible artwork on that card. It should be called Nightshade Peddler File.
Well, that peddler has been exposed to too much nightshade, see.
Oh, God.
It makes it, it reminds me of what I believe Nate looks like when he's brewing a new deck.
What?
Just terrifying.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, can I blaze for the next bit? Right, so this next one is all cards that only really work in Garve because they're either in his colors or they play into his particular strategy. Corpse Jack Menace, 2, a black and a green for a fungus 4/4 creature. If 1 or more +1/+1 counters be placed on a creature, you control twice that many +1/+1 counters on that creature instead. So if you have him out and you cast Garve, he comes in as a 10/10.
Oh my God.
And then when you start shifting your creating saplings and sacrificing them, so you create 1 sapling, sacrifice it, put 2 +1/+1 tokens back on Garve. So it just starts doubling up your tokens all over the place because you're shifting them around. It's an absolute must in a Garve deck. Ivory Tusk Fortress is an Abzan card from Khan's Tarkir. It's 2 and an Abzan for a 5/7 creature elephant. And untap each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it during another player's untap step. Now, for a while, this was kind of half a Prophet of Crufix for the Ivory Tusk Fortress, for the Garve deck. Untapping all your creatures means you can attack really comfortably with your giant horde of tokens. Really, really nicely.
That's a gumball. Oh, sorry, I should mention Corpse Jack Menace. That's a gumball and a half. Ivory Task Fortress, 25 cents. Golgari Germination is an enchantment for one and a Golgari. That's a black and a green, folks. It's an enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 green sapling token onto the battlefield. It's just value town.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that before looking in the show notes here. That's an amazing card.
I added it.
It's just value town. Especially as you tend to do a lot of self-sacrificing in that deck. And then everyone's favorite guy that needs a help up the ladder.
Dagatar.
The Adamant.
Dagatar.
Now, for once, he's actually useful.
I just put that in as a joke.
He's not terrible. He's not terrible in this deck.
As much fun as we've made of this card, and I admit I probably mocked him mercilessly, he's a surprisingly useful card.
Okay, so he's 3 and a white for a 4. Well, he's a 0/0 with vigilance. When he enters the battlefield, he has 4+1/+1 counters in it. So 4 mana for a 4/4 vigilance is okay. But his special power is 1 and 2 hybrid black-green. You can move a +1/+1 counter from a target creature onto a second target creature. So the key thing there that a lot of people miss is it's not target creature you control. So you can actually steal +1/+1 counters of other people's creatures. I just think it's 1 mana too many. If it was 1 generic and a hybrid green-black, it would be fine.
Yeah, he eats a lot of mana.
He does. That's his problem. He's mana hungry. And he's not actually in my deck, but he's not an automatic like people treat him in that deck.
Yeah, as a commander... most effective in the... Well, no, that's not terrible. I mean, I've played it numerous times now because I mocked it. A listener sent us a deck, and I've been tuning it since then. Dagatar's not too bad as a commander because, again, you want him in the late game when you have plenty of mana available. And that ability, if you've got something like Hardened Scales out or, you know, any of the token doublers... That ability to move tokens around pays off. You put him in a deck with Corpse Jack Menace, and then they're out together, and suddenly you're in value town again.
You've got commander damage pretty quickly if he's the commander.
Yeah, it's a big threat.
I would Voltron. I'd like do like a hybrid Voltron token strategy with this guy.
Yep.
Nick, there's a task for you. As I'm not a massive token guy, and I'm not a massive Voltron guy. Show me how it should be done.
I'll get a deck list together for you.
Yeah, that'd be good fun. I'd like to see that.
Dagatar.
But yeah, so that's Garve. So with Garve, you're really looking at... I think it was Mark Rosewater on one of his podcasts where he was discussing the different colour pairings. And when he discussed Golgari, he spoke about Golgari tokens, which obviously Garve is Abzan, but Golgari is within that. And he says the thing with... tokens with Golgari, it's more actually about counters than tokens. So you're making one or two creatures go very big rather than making a wide spread of little guys. So with Abzan, you've got this strange hybrid where you can keep adapting your battlefield. So you can either build a load of guys up, and if it's all going wrong, you can jam them all into one tasty package. And I guess that's why I like playing Garve if I'm going to play tokens at all. Also, it doesn't have red in it and screw gruel.
I'll say that Nath falls outside that Golgari strategy.
Nath's hit the hand, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Nath converts your opponent's cards into tokens.
Yes, and Nath stops your opponents having cards in their hands, which is its real strength.
And that's a wonderful side effect.
It's a terrible side effect, horrendous. Nate.
I do like the image, though, that Nath is constantly slapping your wrist.
hey, what you got? I'll hold this card. Away.
Oh. What did
Sean,
I do?
Sean, does your deck run Necrogenesis? I don't see it on the list here.
It has been in. It's a deck that constantly evolves for me, Garve. It's one of my evergreen decks, which is what I mean. Decks, once I've built them, I'm never going to take them apart. I'm just going to keep tinkering. So it has been in there before when I've needed more graveyard hate, and it's probably shifted out when the meta I've been using it in has stopped being so graveyard dependent. So it's been in versions of it. Necrogenesis is a enchantment for a green and a black, and you can pay, I think, is it a colorless, to exile target creature card from an opponent's graveyard and put a one.
I believe it's two colorless, but yeah.
Two generic mana.
Is it two generic mana? It's not one colorless at all, is it? That would be wrong on both accounts. It's two generic mana. And yeah, you exile target creature card in an opponent's graveyard and put a 1/1 sapling in. So yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. And that is cost nothing at all, really, because it's just been reprinted in Modern Masters 2, or Modern Masters 2015, as it should be called. So, beating tokens.
Can't do it.
Before we go on to...
Oh, is this my section?
Well, I guess it's everyone's section, because it's something I do a lot, is beating tokens.
And we've all played against Nick, after all.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every playgroup has a token player in it, doesn't it? There's always one.
One? What are you talking about, one?
So how do you beat these decks?
Can't do it.
Well, let's see. Apply -1/-1 counters to everything, like Black Sun Zenith for X and black. Put X -1/-1 counters on each creature, and then you shuffle it back into your library to do it again later. And that's about $1.50, plus or minus. But in general, use board wipes. And here's a interesting board wipe that Nick recently introduced me to again.
Oh, I love this card.
Balefire Dragon, 5 and red. Nick, you want to read the rest
sure.
of this?
5 and 2 red, 6/6 dragon with flying. When it deals combat damage to a player, it deals that much damage to each creature that player controls.
Disgusting.
Which will be at least 6, unless there's some flying thing
yeah.
that you can trample
Sean over. Sean and I had fun with this card earlier today. Or at least I did.
Yeah. But that's around $7 to $8.
So this card, Balefire Dragon, was the go-to token remover in my Maelstrom Wanderer deck. I needed a creature that could sweep.
What about Steel Hellkite?
Yeah, he was one of them as well. But Balefire Dragon is super funky. Because he kills everything that's toughness 6 or less.
Mm-hmm.
Steel Hellkite just reprinted. For 6 generic mana, you get an artifact creature dragon with flying. For 2, you can pump it +1, but whatever, as Nate would say. For X, destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost X whose controller was dealt combat damage by Steel Hellkite this turn. So you fly over all of these non-flying tokens, spend 0 mana, and destroy all of your opponent's tokens.
Yeah, a very comparable card. If you have a lot of problems fighting tokens in your meta, is Ratchet Bomb, which is 2
oh,
mana.
Right.
Yeah, 2 mana for an artifact. You can tap it to put a Ratchet counter on it, or you can tap it to sacrifice Ratchet Bomb and destroy all non-land permanents that have CMC equal to the, or less to the number of just equal to the number of Ratchet counters on the Ratchet Bomb. Dude, you can drop it for 2, tap it, wipe all the tokens on the table. And because it's an artifact, it's really easy to recur. Really, really easy to recur.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes maybe people build decks around that ability to recur that artifact.
Filled in tokens.
Mm-hmm. Surely if you had Shroom in your deck to put that in, you would put it in. Shroom?
Yeah.
No. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, you've just killed Sheldon Menery.
Yeah, he just had a heart attack at his keyboard. Sorry.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of board wipes available, but I would say if you're playing against a token deck with lots of creatures, you preferably want to use board wipes that inflict pain proportional to the number of creatures, such as Deadly Tempest. 4 black sorcery. Destroy all creatures. Each player loses life equal to the number of creatures he or she controlled that were destroyed this way. And that's about 63 to 171. That's a big range. whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a big range, and it's I'm not sure what MTG price was doing there.
I picked them up for about £1, because I replaced a lot of my Crux of Fates with them, because there's a lot of tokens in our group.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to do it in red, Incite Rebellion, 4 red-red sorcery. For each player, Incite Rebellion deals damage to that player and each creature that player controls, equal to the number of creatures he or she controls. And that's 1-2 gumballs. And those spells are how Jaleva deals with token decks.
Cards like these are why the token commander wants to have sack outlets available at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If they can sacrifice them at instant speed, they can reduce the number of damage that they receive.
Right. I've got it lower on the list, but it's probably worth mentioning because it's very similar. Massacre Worm, which is one of the best black cards for Commander Full Stops. 3/3 black for a 6/5 creature worm. When it enters the battlefield, creatures your opponents control get -2/-2 to the end of turn. So that's often going to wipe someone. This is the key bit, though, for how you're going to kill someone. Whenever a creature an opponent controls is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, that player loses 2 life. So I've played against someone that resolved Stormherd, that puts a 1/1 token in for each life they have. My turn is like, Masker Worm, bye, adios. It's such a good card, Masker Worm, and it's very similar to Deadly Tempest, but it's not a sorcery.
Yeah, that's brutal.
So commanders in these decks are often the key to victory. They are the machine that creates the tokens. So keep them off the board. And all of these commanders have counters on them that keep them alive. So there's Aether Snap, 3 black-black sorcery. Remove all counters from all permanents. And exile all tokens. Get out of here. Next, Thief of Blood recently came out. 4 black-black creature vampire, 1/1 flying. As Thief of Blood enters the battlefield, remove all counters from all permanents. Thief of Blood enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each counter removed this way. And there's the old favorite Vampire Hexmage. Black-black, 2/1 creature vampire shaman first strike. Sacrifice Vampire Hexmage. Remove all counters from target permanent. And all of these are around 2-3 gumballs each, and all of these can kill planeswalkers too.
Okay, there is one other card, and at $800, it's a snap. That's the Tabernacle at Pendrell Vale.
Oh, yeah.
Now, kids, go get your parents' wallets, buy 2 copies, and send one to Sean at Commander.
To my great sorrow, Tabernacle was only $300 when I started playing 2.5-3 years ago. And I think I traded a Tabernacle way back in 1995.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
A moment of silence for Phil's Tabernacle.
Yeah. It's a land, everyone who doesn't know, that says all creatures in play have a upkeep of 1 generic mana. Just filthy on a land.
I've only seen it played once, and it made me very sad.
I've seen Pendrell Mists played, which is a blue enchantment that does the same thing, and that was oppressive, but that was on a land. My God.
All right, so Nate, you have a message of the week, a card of the week, don't you?
Yes, my closing message of the week is the card Illness in the Ranks for just a single black. It's an enchantment. Creature tokens get -1/-1. And it's just costs a gumball. And the flavor text, Selesnya denied us tribute. Let's show them the error of their ways, nice. Says Milana Orzhov Prelate. Speaking of Selesnya, our next big token episode will focus on green and white token-loving commanders with Rhys the Redeemed, Emara Tandris, and Trostani, Voice of Selesnya.
Are we really going to talk about Emara Tandris?
Yeah, okay.
Sort of.
Yeah. We talk about Emara Tandris in the same way we talked about Melek. Quickly and in mostly disparaging tones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. When we were planning the Big Mana 3 episode, we originally just had it as the copying commanders, which were Melek and Riku and Wartmom. But we realized we couldn't really talk about Melek without talking about Mizzix. So that actually bumped an episode. We were going to do a watch list on Rite of Replication. So we have to save that until the Mono Blue Big Mana 4 episode.
Guys,
excellent tease.
We had a listener question submitted for Nick, which I can read.
Oh.
Nick, you ready for this?
Really?
You should not only read it, you should maybe post it in the...
It's all right, I know.
In the show plan.
It's from at Nick Jaragoski, and it asks, Nick, if you are stuck on a hostile plane, which planeswalker would you rely on and ask to get you out of trouble on that plane?
Oh, that is a great question. Well...
There's a gaggle of nine goblins.
A gaggle?
Of nine goblins.
Coming at you with knives. Sharp ones.
I would have to go with my undervalued buddy, Garuk Wildspeaker. He would, just call up some beast friends to, take care of the goblins while we made off for safety.
Nick, want to play with pets? He wouldn't get you off the plane, though. He'd trip over himself, smash his face in the floor, and some wolf would come and help him out.
Well, he'd throw a beast in the way, and then you escape into the lands that he untaps until you can regroup, and then you come back and trample everybody.
See, Nate explained it better than I could.
It's a good question, though. It's a very good question.
Yay!
Nick, since we're almost at the end of the show, why don't you tell people how they can stalk you online?
Well, I don't know about stalking, but if you'd like to have a friendly conversation with me, I am on Twitter, at RadisNick. Or you can find me on Facebook by my name, Nicholas Jaragrulski. We still need to get that changed, but I'm on there.
And at RadisNick is spelled...
RadisNick.
And, of course, Jaragoski is...
J-A...
Polish?
Yes. J-A-R-A-G-O-S-K-Y.
Right. Thanks, Nick, for coming on the show. You are the recognized expert in token deck building, and we couldn't do one of these shows without inviting you on. So thank you for making the time.
Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, we know that your life is about to get a lot more complicated, and a special thanks to Jessica for permitting this time.
I am about to make a creature token of my very own.
What creature type is it?
We don't know yet. It's going to be a surprise.
But presumably it's a human baby.
I think listeners should tweet at us suggestions for Nick's child's name.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Let's not reveal that the choices yet. So listeners, definitely tweet at us. That's at Commander and MTG on Twitter. Also, don't forget to include at RadisNick, and then we'll talk about the name choices on the next show.
And Nick, am I right in thinking that coming on the show, you legally agreed to honor whatever name our listeners picked for your child?
We still have to work out the fine details on that with the wife, but we'll see where it takes us.
Well, don't hold back, listeners. Let us know. Speaking of not holding back, we did just recently launch a Patreon, or Patreon, some people call it. And we're asking for help so that we can focus more on creating cool content for the show, because right now we're spending an awful lot of time formatting the show so you can listen to it and put it in your ear holes every week. If all anybody did was put a buck a show into the hopper at our Patreon, we would be doing well, we would meet most of our goals, and we would bring you extra special content. For example, if you pledge $10 at kind of an individual level, you can do this, then you'll be one of the listeners who gets personal invitations to our special live hangouts. If you're on Facebook, we might pull you into a special donators-only Facebook group, and the folks there are going to be the first ones that we turn to play test decks online. So you'll get to play test your favorite decks with us. See, and we'll recommend, of course, just as a byproduct of playing, as you always do, we'll recommend cards that maybe you haven't considered and stuff. You should take a listen to our tech episode to see how we do that. We do it on Skype. We do it using the Cockatrice client, and that prepares us for paper magic and for online magic if you're playing Mitgo. Like we mentioned earlier, Robin Koss. Robin came in. He's an excellent player. But what he found was, after playtesting with us, he went back to his meta and just hammered them mercilessly. There was even some talk about how he looked them all in the eyes and said, "Imagine if you were from a nation that had a history of empire domination."
He's my near brother, Robin.
Yeah. He is part of the Pan-European Alliance. I look forward to hearing more about that too, Sean.
We're going out drinking together in Sweden at some point. So,
excellent.
I will do a field report about the dark, hollow eyes of the blonde people as they walk by drinking their 90% proof alcohol, singing ABBA songs and putting together flat pack furniture.
Yeah.
We love you, Sweden. Yeah. We genuinely do.
Yes, our 10, perhaps 11 listeners in Sweden, we love every one of you. So you can find us on Patreon by searching for Commanderin MTG. That's all one word on Patreon. We are putting the link in the show notes, so you'll see it if you download this episode. And please, we really want to bring you a lot of these reward levels, like extra song parodies, full song parodies, not just the snippets we've been doing. Lots of fun there.
I don't know if we can do that.
Song parodies?
I don't know if we can ask people for money for us to parody copyrighted work. I'm not sure that that's actually cool.
Well, we're doing it.
I thought you get fair
use. I don't know. Weird Al does it.
I was about to say, how does Weird Al do it?
Weird Al asks permission from the artists.
He doesn't need to, though.
That's a courtesy.
He does it out of courtesy.
Kurt Cobain, there was a conversation between Kurt Cobain and Weird Al where he asked, could he cover one of his... I don't think that happened, did it? Is there not a fair use rule? I don't know what the American law is. In England, basically...
I'd have to research
in
that.
In England, if you're doing it as parody, you can do it the boop like.
Yeah, there is a fair use rule. Otherwise, morning zoos across the nation would have to reformat their shows.
We'll look into that.
We love our listeners. You're fun. You tell us what you think. You even play test decks with us. Please take the time to contact us. And if you really like us, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you don't, just go f*** yourself. It makes us feel better. And we can point to it and say, hey, look at that, to the people who care about such things.
That reminds me, Nate, I'm sorry. We were supposed to run a 5-star review contest, but because we ran long today, actually going to extend that another week. And so by the time we record our next episode, we will have selected people who gave us 5-star reviews on iTunes for prizes.
And remember, one of the Patreon things is $20. Sean will do anything. As long as it's not illegal.
Okay. Our theme song was created for the podcast by me. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from Kelly. You can find him at mrpicto.co.uk. Special thanks to Tech Wizzes, Jesse Thompson, and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderinmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com. Find us on all the social medias, and if we're not on the one you look for, then tell us and we'll get on it by searching for Commanderin MTG Podcast. Individually on Twitter, I'm at Mr. Plorg.
I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26. And Nick?
I am at Redis Nick.
And
Do you know how to take us out?
Oh, you want me to take? Okay, that's fine. Our show? And we are Commander In.
Is that our show?
That's not how we end the show, Nick. It's like you've never listened.
God. And that's our show?
And that's our show. So let's try that again.
Okay, let's
and
do it again.
Nick.
So, and I am at Redis Nick. And that's our show.
Let's try it again with English words.
Stop blessing.
Can you just say, and that's our show?
And that's our show. Yeah!
Commander In.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, Nick's never been around for 50 Shades of Marrow, has he?
No, I haven't.
Nate normally tunes up. It's where we take pages of 50 Shades of Grey and read it in the style of Mark Rosewater. It's very simple, but very funny.
Oh my god.
Boo!